Welcome to the Menopause Conversations podcast. My name's Angela Council, and I am your host for this podcast. And this is where you learn all about menopause, what is happening to your body, to your hormones, and life in general. Everything is changing, and sometimes it can seem really, really confusing. But this is where the confusion stops right now. This podcast will share with you everything you need to know about how you can navigate your menopause transition with ease. So sit back and enjoy the show. Bye for now. Hello and welcome back to this week's episode of Menopause Conversations podcast. My name is Angela, your host for this podcast. And this week I'm bringing you a recording of a masterclass, a menopause demystified masterclass that I ran recently. I thought I would share it with, you know, as many people as possible, because this gives you an understanding of what is happening with your hormones, the changes that are happening with your hormones, and why it's really important that we don't just look at the hormones, because the reproductive hormones, because quite often there's other things that are going on. And I cover this in this masterclass. So please enjoy the masterclass. If you're listening to it on audio, I did actually have a set of slides that I used with this, but I think you can kind of get from the words I say, you know, what was in the slides. I don't think that having those extra slides are going to make that much difference because you don't have them. So enjoy, and I will catch up with you at the end of this episode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to tonight's masterclass, Menopause Demystified. So just before we do get started, I just want to give a little bit of a disclaimer that the information that I do share with you tonight is general in nature and shouldn't be considered as specific health advice. I can't answer specific health questions because I need a full health history, and I can't get that here on a webinar, and I need a consultation for this. So I won't be discussing intricacies of HRT, the best type to take, or what you need to be taking for XYZ symptoms. I won't be going through that because I just don't have enough information, and I don't want to be giving you information that might not be right for you. I'm very much about that there is an individual solution for all of you. Now, if you do want this type of advice, particularly if it's around HRT, you're best to find yourself a doctor who specializes in menopause. If it's about some of the things we're talking about tonight, I'll let you know at the end of this particular session how you can learn a little bit more from me and get a few more answers. So let's just jump into everything. So menopause, what does menopause mean? Now, really simply, it just means the cessation of your period. But obviously, we know that menopause means so much more than that. And it is a different journey for everyone. It's like no one has the same experiences, which is why it's very hard to come up with a single solution that everybody should be doing this and everybody should be doing that. It is individual. I can remember when I was on the floor and I was in tears, and I was broken, and it was almost like depression. It's not something that I've actually experienced before, but that's kind of how I felt, really, really heavy. I had been in constant pain. I wasn't sleeping properly. My weight was stacking on. I couldn't lose it. I wasn't exercising because of the amount of pain I was in. It was just like I had no idea what was really happening. Now, you know, it was about 5 years ago, so I'd been a naturopath for about 15 years. I'd been working in women's health, and I thought I understood, hormones, and I kind of had an idea of what was going to happen when I came to menopause, but I didn't know anything. I was so confused. And it kind of hit me one day, oh, hang on a minute, this is menopause. And because I'd had my children later, I was breastfeeding up until I was 45. So, you know, the tiredness and all of that, I thought just came from having young children. But then, you know, the pain, that was it. There was that unbelievable pain that just kept going on. And I read some research and an article about pain in menopause, because this was something that was never taught to us when I was studying to be a naturopath. It was just never spoken about. And there was kind of then a few things, you know, because I already understood how hormones work, a few pieces of the puzzle just started to fall into place for me. And I realized what was going on, but I was kind of stuck and going, well, what am I going to do here? Because really menopause wasn't giving me the freedom I was expecting it to give me. Yes, my period was stopping, but other than that, you know, it was not the, you know, I've been promised that menopause was going to make everything better, and it definitely wasn't. But what I did is I started to talk to other women to find out what they were experiencing. And I was finding other women were kind of feeling lost at the same time as I was. They didn't understand what was going on. And so I was doing a lot of research. I wanted to learn more about what was going on. But I thought, well, there are women that come through this time of life with no real issues. And so I started to talk to some older women and just ask them their experience. And I found that there were a group who basically said, well, I don't know, my period stopped and then life just went on. And they didn't seem to be having any type of symptoms. So I kind of asked more questions to find out, well, was it the food? You know, was it their diet? Was it their exercise? What was it? But what I was finding is that there was no common answer, that they were all doing something different. So I was trying to work out this because I was looking for a solution for me and I was looking for other people. And then I kind of started to look at things a little bit different, and I did realize that things did need to change. Menopause is all about change. Hormones change. And hormones are messengers. So as your hormones change, then your body changes and the way your brain responds changes. And that means that your life is going to change as well. Sorry, ladies, if you kind of want to go back to who you were when you're in your 20s and your 30s, that is not going to happen because the hormones have changed. And menopause is a time of change. And it's when we can accept that change and when we understand what is happening and why it's happening, and you've got the knowledge and the information, you can then make better decisions as to what is going to work for you. And I just want to share with you, this is just an email I received from a woman, and she says, you know, at 40, I wore a bikini to the beach and I could work all day. I could stop by the gym on the way home and I felt great. Now at the age of 47, I'm overweight. I'm too tired to do a single push-up. And some days it can take me 3-4 minutes to remember a simple word. Who knows that? Like yesterday, I couldn't even remember the word culture. I used to feel so sharp and motivated for life. And now I just want to stay in my sweats under a blanket and sleep all day. My blood pressure's up. My blood sugar's up. My muscles are a joke. And I just can't get the energy to care about any of it. What tiny scraps of motivation I do have need to go to my work, my family, and I've got nothing left in the tank for me. Does this sound familiar? How many women feel, you know, can relate to some of this? And it is a time of change and it can be tough. Let's just really, you know, let's be honest here. It can be tough. Now, for some women, they can go through this time of life and really have no problems whatsoever. So 20% of women have no issues whatsoever. 20% of women, it's really, really severe. And for 60% of women, you know, it is tough, but it's not, it doesn't severely impact life, and you know, they are able to manage things by just making a few changes with what's going on. But just like the caterpillar, when it kind of goes into the cocoon, mush down into nothing, and then as the butterfly is ready to emerge from the cocoon, it starts to break the cocoon open. Now, if we come along and cut that cocoon open to make it easier for the butterfly to come out, the butterfly doesn't develop its wings and it will die shortly after because it doesn't have strong wings, it can't fly. So this is a little bit like menopause. It's like that struggle is giving you that strength, that ability to fly. So as you come out of the other side, as you come through, you know, this transition, that you are stronger, you are wiser, and you've got so much more to offer. So this is what's possible for you, and this is what I do want to share with you tonight on tonight's session. So it is really about understanding what is happening to your body. So please just share with me Some of the symptoms that you might be experiencing, my main one was the joint and body pain. I was just in pain for so long, I couldn't sleep. And then, as I said, I couldn't exercise, so I always had this weight gain that just wouldn't shift. I didn't have too many hot flushes, but maybe you do. Sleep problems. I used to have sleep problems. Don't anymore. It's fantastic getting a good night's sleep now, and brain fogginess. So just let me share in the comments what type of symptoms you might be experiencing. What have we got here? Memory fog. Yeah. I still do that sometimes. I write a lot of things down because I've got a lot of things going on. And sometimes I think we forget how much we actually have going on. So it is, you know, if you can, you know, on your phone, you can be writing notes or just write things down. I write everything down because otherwise I'll forget it and I'll remember it. Or, you know, or I remember it at 2 o'clock in the morning, which is not when I want to. We've got all of the above: joint pain, weight, brain fog, weight gains, memory issues, maybe pain, listlessness, joint pain, sleep issues, weight gain. So, you know, we've got this commonality of different symptoms. So my next question to you is, what would you be prepared to do to eliminate your symptoms? So just let me know in the comments, what would you be prepared to do? Just let me know. We can't sleep, flushes, disrupted sleep. I can't find the words for things. I have no recall for names, birthdays, movies, and books. I've given up trying to remember people's birthdays. If it's not my diary, I don't know. Like, I don't live with my children anymore. It's probably a good thing because they all used to get called by my dog's name. It's like when the kids did live at home, it's like I used to stand there going, okay, which one do I want to talk to? And because one was male and one was female, and I still used to get their names wrong, or I'd call them by the dog's name. Change routine, eat better, exercise. So just let me know, what would you be prepared to do? And I do want you to remember what answer you're giving to this question, because I'm going to come back and ask you again at the end. Find a time capsule to go back. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen, but you have the opportunity now to change going forward. So you don't need to go back. We can go forward. So let's just start looking. I want to start first at how the hormones work. So what I've got up on the screen, this is kind of like what would be called a normal cycle. Roughly around about 28 days. It's not exactly 28 days, but day one starting on the first day of bleed, and we go through until we start to bleed again. And when we look at these lines, the red line is estrogen, and what we have with estrogen is at the beginning of the cycle when we're bleeding, estrogen is low, and then as we come into the middle of the cycle, estrogen comes up high because that the estrogen is telling the ovaries to release an egg. Once the egg has released around about day 14, but it could be day 16, it is different for everyone, but it's roughly the middle of your cycle, depending on how long your cycle is. So the middle of the cycle, egg releases, and then estrogen drops off for a bit because the egg is now out. And now what happens is progesterone stays low until after the egg is released. And the reason for this is because the egg is actually what produces progesterone. Now, there are some other names. I'm just going to keep it pretty simple. I'm not going to get into some of the real technical names, but the egg releases progesterone. And if you fall pregnant, if that egg gets fertilized, then progesterone continues to go up and stays up for about 3 months for the first 3 months of pregnancy until the placenta takes over the role. But if you don't fall pregnant, what happens is progesterone drops off, and then estrogen kind of has another little of a burst, and then you get the message to that you're not pregnant, so it's time to clean out the uterus, and then you get a period again. And then testosterone kind of runs relatively stable until, except for the middle, where there is a little bit of increase in testosterone, and that's to increase your libido to help you fall pregnant, so that, you know, you want to mate. You know, not obviously at our stage of life, many of us are probably not trying to fall pregnant, but this is just the way the body works, because the female body was designed to, you know, reproduce and to populate. So That's kind of like what one would call a normal cycle. Now, for many women, the estrogen levels are actually higher than the progesterone levels. So if you're experiencing any type of PMS, or if you did experience any type of PMS, it's because estrogen, we've still got the ups and downs going on, but estrogen is higher than progesterone, like a lot higher than progesterone. So there's a gap, a bigger gap than what we want. And this is what we call estrogen dominance. And that's where PMS symptoms come from, when there's a bigger gap between progesterone and estrogen than what is ideal. But then as we come into perimenopause, what happens is we start to run down on our egg supply. We don't have as many eggs. We don't have very good quality eggs. So the progesterone is the first hormone that starts to drop off. And that's because we don't ovulate every month. So if we're not ovulating, the egg is not producing any progesterone. If we don't have good quality eggs, the egg is not producing any progesterone. So progesterone is actually the first hormone to drop down. And some months you will ovulate, some months you won't, which is why you kind of have up and downs with progesterone. Now, with estrogen, now everyone thinks, oh, estrogen just comes down as we're coming through perimenopause and beyond. That's actually not true. In fact, estrogen goes up, and it's a very much a roller coaster, and it can change from day to day. So one day it can be right up, the next day it can be down. So it's just going up and down and up and down. And this is one of the reasons why blood tests at this time of life is they're not very accurate and not the really good way to determine whether or not you're in perimenopause or not. Because one day, you know, if you had the blood test done on one day, it might say, oh, everything's okay. But then if you had the blood test done the next day, it might have your estrogen levels through the roof. So it's not a very accurate way of determining whether or not you're in perimenopause. The best way that we use to determine whether or not you're in perimenopause is looking at what's going on with your cycle, any symptoms you might be experiencing, and your age is also a factor there as well. So with these hormones, they're kind of going up and down, but there is this gradual trend as we go through perimenopause, and then we get to menopause. Now, menopause itself is a single day. It's like one day. So it's the day 12 months after your last period. Now, we don't know when our last period is going to be until we haven't had any more. So, and this is the reason why the 12 months came around was really, it was more for contraceptive purposes. Doctor said, well, look, if you haven't had a period for 12 months, well, we figure you're not going to have another period. So everything's over. So you don't really need to worry about contraception. But in the time beforehand, you do need to worry about contraception so you're not falling pregnant. So, you know, that's kind of where the 12 months came from. So menopause itself is that one day. And once you've got through that day, now you're postmenopausal. Now, it is possible sometimes for some women they do bleed again after that 12-month period. If you do bleed after that 12th period, it is important that you get that looked at. Look, generally there's nothing wrong. Sometimes hormones just kind of do a bit of a shift and can trigger a bleed. But if you do bleed after 12 months, it is important to get that checked just to make sure there is nothing else that needs to be looked at, that you know there's nothing that you need to be worried about. So this is kind of how the hormones go. And then so there's a transition, and perimenopause can start, late 30s, early 40s. And I think this is what many women don't realize. So perimenopause is this time period before that last 12 months where we're waiting for your final period to come on. And during this time, things can start to change. Now, you know, I've got, you know, four stages here up on the screen. Now, they're not necessarily linear, and you can kind of go backwards and forwards, but, you know, in possibly your early 40s, you start to notice that there's a bit of a change in the menstrual cycle. So maybe before of maybe your 28, 29 days, you might find it's coming down to 27, 26 days, but we still got regular ovulation happening at this stage. And then you get to the stage whereby the cycle starts to become a little bit more irregular. You might have short cycles, you might have long cycles, you're not ovulating all of the time, and you might then start to notice different symptoms, sore breasts, and different symptoms might start to happen as well. And then the next stage is stage three, and that's when the menstrual cycle can be longer. And this is like you're skipping periods. You might go 2 to 3 months without a period, and then all of a sudden you have one, and it might be quite heavy, and then you don't have another one, you know, for a couple of months, and then you might have a couple really, really close. So there's this real irregularity going on. And then we start to notice that there's more and more symptoms. And then you get to the stage whereby you have a period and then you don't have one for 12 months. And this is like this waiting period, waiting for that 12-month period. Look, and as hormones start to settle down, symptoms often start to settle down as well. And the reason for this is because of the what our body does. Now, you know, I said earlier that our body is designed to reproduce, and when we've run out of eggs, then the body goes, well, okay, we're no longer reproducing, so it does have to change. Now, the ovaries no longer have eggs, so they're not producing as much estrogen. There's no progesterone coming because there's no eggs at all. And so there needs to be a switch. Now, the brain is the controller of this. So when you're in your reproductive stage of life, basically the brain talks to the ovaries and then the ovaries talks back. And we've got a part of our brain called the hypothalamus, and then it talks to another part of the brain called the pituitary. And the pituitary gland is the master controller for our hormones. And it sends a message down to the ovaries and says, hey, it's time to release an egg. It's time to release some estrogen. And it kind of tells the ovaries when to release estrogen, when to stop releasing estrogen. So it just, this conversation just keeps coming backwards and forwards between the ovaries and the brain. Now, as we're running out of eggs and we're not, and the ovaries are kind of winding themselves down, they kind of go to sleep a little bit, and the brain's sending a message down to the ovaries, but the ovaries aren't always getting the message. And then the brain keeps sending this message down and the ovary isn't responding, so it sends another message down. And do you know what it's like when you have your phone and you turn it off and then you turn it back on and all of a sudden all of these messages come through? This is kind of what happens, is the brain's been sending all of these messages and the ovaries are kind of been just going da da da, not really listening too much. And then all of a sudden it kind of happens and gets all of these messages. And then all of a sudden you get a period and it gets a heavy period. And then this is where we get all the irregularity, and the hormones are going up and down because the estrogen's going, oh my God, I've got to release a whole pile of estrogen. I haven't released any in a while. You start to get symptoms. So this is where this irregularity and these symptoms start to come from. And then an egg might come out, so you might get a bit of progesterone, or it doesn't come out and you don't get any progesterone, so estrogen's higher. So what the body is very, very clever. It kind of knows over time, the brain's realizing it's not getting a response from the ovaries. Now, we do have a backup plan. We don't need as much estrogen when we're not producing an egg every month because we're not preparing our body for pregnancy, but we still do need some estrogen because estrogen is required to protect our heart, our bones, our brain, and all of that. So the body does have a backup plan, as I said. We have got estrogen receptors in different parts of the body, and our adrenal glands have the ability to produce these reproductive hormones. So what happens is, rather than our brain going to our ovaries to have the conversation, it starts now talking to our adrenal glands. Now, our adrenal, then we've got the pituitary, the hypothalamus, pituitary, and then the adrenal glands having this conversation. And the pituitary gland says, hey, ovaries are gone to sleep. They're not doing any work. I need you to start producing some progesterone and some estrogen. The problem is the adrenal glands produce our stress hormones. So these are our stress glands. And the majority of women, when they come into this time of life, are pretty stressed. You know, they're raising children, they're running businesses, they've got jobs, they've got partners, probably aging parents, they've got a lot of stuff going on. And when the body has got a lot of things going on and there's limited resources to make hormones, it will always make the stress hormones first, because that's required to keep us alive. We don't need the stress hormones to keep us, so we don't need reproductive hormones to keep us alive. So what happens is the body starts putting, instead of making the reproductive hormones, it kind of makes sure that it's got all of the stress hormones being covered. And then whatever's left over, then it'll start making reproductive hormones. So this is now when we have these imbalances going on and we start to experience symptoms. It's because it's a lot of it's to do with the amount of stress that our body is under. And it's also not just about our reproductive hormones. And this is really important. We do have to look at what else is going on, because quite often, you know, I see this a lot, you know, in lots of social media groups and things like that. And doctors say, well, you know, oh, that's just part of menopause. That's just a menopause symptom. And they're kind of dismissing you. And when someone just blames something on menopause, it's almost like, well, it's menopause. There's nothing you can do about it. But sometimes it's not menopause. It might be happening at this time of life, but it's not menopause. And some of the other hormones that we need to be really looking at to see what is going on to make sure it's not something else. We need to be looking at other areas. You know, is it the thyroid? The thyroid's responsible for metabolism. So if you're struggling to lose weight, if you have anxiety, you're losing your hair, you know, and various other things like that, it could actually be a thyroid issue as opposed to it being a menopause issue. Cortisol, which is your stress hormone, I'll talk about that in a little bit more. Melatonin, which is your sleep hormone. If your melatonin levels are not high enough, you're not going to be getting enough sleep. And when your cortisol levels, so your stress hormones are high, your melatonin levels are low. They work opposite each other. So when we're highly stressed, we don't sleep. So, you know, do we need to be looking at what's going on with your melatonin levels? Insulin, I'm going to go into that in a little bit more detail as well, but insulin's responsible for producing energy and also storing fat. And then we've got two other hormones, which is ghrelin and leptin. And ghrelin is your hunger hormone. It tells you you're hungry, and your leptin one tells you you're full. And these get out of balance if you don't get enough sleep. So this is where we then need to make sure we've, you know, got enough melatonin. Thyroid hormones, if you've got an issue with your thyroid, will also stop you from sleeping. So there's many other factors that could be playing a role in these symptoms. And if we're just saying, oh, it's menopause, and we're not looking deeper, then it's possible that something else is happening. So it's important that we look at what is really going on. Now, I really want to really focus on stress for a minute, because as I said, the adrenal glands is where we kind of have the backup on our hormones, but our adrenal glands are running because of the amount of stress. And there's many, the different causes of stress, and it's how your body is experiencing stress. Now, if you're experiencing any type of symptoms as well, there is stress going on in your body. So any type of symptom is an indication that there's some type of stress going on. And there's different things that can cause stress on your body, you know. And, you know, I've got, these are just some of the things that I've got listed down here. There's many, many more. But, you know, not getting into good enough sleep, being exposed to environmental toxins, not eating the right food, so you're nutrient deficient, too much or not enough exercise, inflammation, emotional stress, all of this. There's so many things that can cause stress in the body. And then when our body is stressed, we then get these symptoms. And the symptoms of, you know, and once again, this is not an exhaustive list, but these are just some of the symptoms of that come from stress by having too much cortisol. Because when we've got too much cortisol, what happens is some of our body processes slow down. So our digestive function closes down, our immune system comes down, our heart rate goes up, so our blood pressure goes up. And this is all designed to keep us alive from whatever threat is going on. So when we look at some of these symptoms and just have a look at them, many of those symptoms are also so-called menopause symptoms. And it's why I don't like using the term menopause symptoms, because there may not be menopause symptoms. I use the phrase symptoms associated with menopause, that they're happening at this time of life, but menopause is not the cause. Menopause is simply a life transition. And, you know, when we start to think of menopause differently, if we start to see it as a life transition rather than a disease, a condition, and something that needs to be treated, then we can actually start to look at, well, I've got these symptoms. What is the real cause? What is happening? You know, and yes, maybe your hormone, you're not making enough hormone, but why are you not making enough hormone? Is it because your body is stressed and the adrenal glands don't have the capacity because they don't have the right nutrients that are required to make more hormone, because your cholesterol levels are too low? You need cholesterol to be able to make these hormones, you know, and if you're on cholesterol lowering drugs, well, then that's actually going to stop your ability to be able to make hormones. And there's many other things that could be playing a role in why you're experiencing things that you are. So why is it that these type of things start, you know, seem to show up at this time of life more? And, you know, I question that maybe they don't, because many of these symptoms can happen at any time of life. They can, many of them happen with pregnancy or shortly after you give birth. Men can experience these things as well. So it's not just happening at this menopause transition, but we seem to focus a lot on it more at this time of life. But there is a reason why we see this a bit more, and it is to do with the fact that our hormones are coming down, because our hormones are very protective and they play a significant role in our health and well-being. So if we look at, say, estrogen, and there's more information about the different hormones in your guidebook. I'm just going to go high level tonight because we don't have a great deal of time. But estrogen helps to regulate insulin. It's very anti-inflammatory. It protects our heart. It protects our bone. It does offer some brain protection. Research is still being done on whether or not it actually impacts Alzheimer's. There's kind of some conflicting thoughts around that. So that's what kind of estrogen does. Progesterone is kind of calming. It's anti-anxiety. It helps you get a good night's sleep. Testosterone protects your muscles, promotes great libido and mood regulation. But that doesn't mean that just because your hormones are lower that everything's going to be doom and gloom and you're destined to have, you know, big health issues for the rest of your life. In fact, if we say just look at the heart disease, because, you know, there's a lot of, I know there's a lot of chat that goes on in social media. I see this over on Instagram a lot. The women need to be taking extra hormones because it protects the heart. It does protect the heart, but that doesn't mean that the next step is that you need to take hormones, because what happens as estrogen does come down, when we're in our reproductive stage of life, our risk for heart disease or cardiovascular disease is a lot lower because of the protection of estrogen. So as our estrogen levels come down, what happens is our risk levels come down to the level of men. So earlier we've got a lot less risk than what men do, but we kind of come to equal as men as our hormones come down. So, you know, when men have higher risk for heart disease, we don't tell them to take hormones. We tell them to eat well. We tell them to exercise. We tell them to look at, you know, sleep and look at their lifestyle. So women need to be doing the same thing. It's important that women do the same things. So this is what this is doing. It's actually putting you back in control. So when your hormones are lower, it's up to you now to take responsibility for the choices that you make. When you've got the protection of the higher level of hormones, you can get away with a few things. And when you were younger, you could probably get away with doing things that you find now that you can't be doing. And this is because now kind of that protection, we've kind of pulled back the curtain and we can actually see the actual impact of your choices you've made earlier in your life. We're now starting to see that because we've kind of removed that protection barrier and now it's up to you to decide. Are you going to take responsibility and make different choices, or are you going to continue on the way you are, which means more than likely you're going to have chronic disease as you age? It is all up to you. But I just want to go through some of the more common issues for women as they come through this time of life and just kind of explain them more in a little bit more detail. And I start with joint pain and body pain. Probably because this was the one that I experienced a lot. And, you know, a lot of women don't realize that this is actually quite common for women as they're coming through this time of life for this to be happening, or they're experiencing the joint pain and they don't understand why. And, you know, it's inflammation. So that's what it is. It's inflammation. Now, inflammation is, when acute, it's very good. We need inflammation. So what inflammation is, it's healing. So imagine you've twisted your ankle. And when you twist your ankle, it becomes inflamed. So it swells up and it becomes stiff and it becomes red and it's sore. Now, all of that is really good. We want it to do that. So the reason why it swells up, because all of these like little chemicals, healing chemicals, come into that area and swell it up so that you can't move it. The idea is it doesn't want you to move it anymore, because if you move it, you might do more damage. So it kind of, it fills it up with all this fluid, so it's all swollen. You can't move properly. All the heat actually is healing the tissue, and this is an acute inflammatory response. Now, if you just allow it to rest and not do anything to it, it will actually resolve itself depending on how bad the damage was within a few days. We tend to go and stick ice on it because we want to get up and walk. It's not necessarily the best thing to do because they're more likely to, we're at higher risk of doing further damage. You know, it's really let it rest, keep it stiff, and allow it to heal. Now, that is acute inflammation. It's exactly what the body needs to do. So we want the body to do that. The issue is chronic inflammation. And this is when, and generally it is caused by food and stress. But chronic inflammation often starts with the gut, but then it becomes systemic and we start to experience in other parts of the bodies. In particular, it can be in your joints, you know, your knees, your hips, your ankles, your wrists, your fingers. And then some people get osteoarthritis, which is another form of inflammation that's going on. So the majority of that is related to not so great food choices over time. And these foods inflame your body and inflame your joints. Now, there are some quite, you know, different people are inflamed by different foods, but there are some common foods that are quite inflammatory. And sorry to say this, alcohol and caffeine are two of them. And so sugar and processed food. So they're all very highly inflammatory foods. And when you're eating those foods, if you've already got pain, this is probably going to make it worse. Gluten for some people will also be quite inflammatory, and dairy can be as well. Look, there's other foods that are inflammatory. I know for me, when I used to experience joint pain, you know, dairy inflames me a lot. And I'd kind of given up cheese, and I used to love cheese, but I'd stopped having cheese. I wasn't having much dairy, but I'm a hiker and I love going out, you know, for a hike. And on Sunday, I normally go for a long hike. And I can remember I used to live in the Northern Beaches in Sydney. I used to do basically walk from DY all the way up to North Head past Manly. And then I'd come back through Manly going back to DY. And it's about, I don't know, about 20 kilometres all up, I think, the whole round trip. And on the way back, as I was walking through Manly, it's like, by this stage I've done about, you know, 14, 15 Ks. I'm going, I need a reward. And so I always kind of used to go past Ben and Jerry's and I'd have an ice cream. And, you know, because I like good quality ice cream. So I used to go and I'd have a Ben and Jerry's, and I would know that as soon as I'd done that, basically I would be in pain. My body would just flare up. And I would get inflamed in my joints, particularly in my hips, my knees, and my ankles. And it's like, you know, I didn't always do that walk. I often did other walks as well, so I wasn't walking towards Manly. But I knew that immediately that when I was having those foods, that my body was going to react. Now, I don't react that much to dairy anymore because I've done a lot of work. But at the time, it was very much keeping me inflamed. And I had to make choices and say, well, okay, I need to stop eating that if I want to get rid of my inflammation because that food is inflaming me. You know, and so-called healthy foods can also be inflammatory. I had one client and she used to eat kale, you know, kale supposedly a superfood, and she used to eat a fair bit of kale. She had kale salads, kale chips, all of that, and she had really bad cystic acne. And it wasn't until a lot of the work I do is around genetics, and I'll talk to you about that in a minute, realizing that she actually could not genetically break down some of the compounds, the chemical compounds within kale, and it was highly inflammatory for her. So when we remove kale out of her diet, her skin completely cleared up. And, you know, so, you know, even healthy foods for some people can be inflammatory. So it's working out what works for you, what foods give you energy, what foods drain you from energy, what foods cause your body to react. So, as I said, what is healthy for one woman might not be good for someone else. You know, the old saying, one person's pleasure can be another person's pain or poison. So it's understanding what works for your body and what things don't work for you, and to actually avoid those things. And sometimes it's not avoiding them forever. It may just be while your body heals, but you'll find that you're probably more reactive now than what you were when you're younger because of that that drop in estrogen. Now, menobelly, this is a really big one, and most of the women that kind of join my Embrace program, this is the issue that they want to address, is this unexplained and hard to shift weight gain. And, you know, it's like I haven't changed the food that I've eaten. I haven't changed the way I've been exercising, but this weight is here and I can't lose it. And I get it. This was my story as well. You know, I ate relatively healthily. I was a naturopath. I knew about healthy living and you know, I kind of ate a paleo style. And then if I wanted to lose weight in the past, I used to do a keto diet, drop the kilos off, and I was fine. So I didn't really have an overly big issue with weight. But then the weight just started to come on. And I thought, what's happening? So I tried keto diet. I couldn't even stick to a keto diet. Nothing was working. And I was looking and saying, well, you know, I was kind of searching and saying, well, what's the diet that we need to be on for menopause? And I was finding that there wasn't a single diet that everyone's telling me something different. Some people are saying, oh, yeah, eat more protein. Other people are saying, oh, no, eat more vegetables, eat more carbs. Everyone was giving me a different, you know, answer. And you've probably experienced the same thing. And I had a lot of shame around my body. You know, I was wearing very baggy clothes. And, you know, as a health professional that works with women, particularly as they're coming through menopause, I wasn't talking about weight. I didn't want to talk about it because I didn't have the solution. I hadn't worked it out. I have since worked it out, and I'll share with you in a minute what I did. But a couple of the reasons why this happens. So let's focus on why it happens. Two reasons. Number one is the high levels of cortisol. Now, I spoke about cortisol before. When our body is highly stressed, we're releasing cortisol. Now, there's a primitive part of our brain, and it's kind of when it detects that there's any type of stress, it starts to go into action and release this cortisol. Now, in the past, that type of stress, you know, when we were kind of wandering around as cave women, you know, that stress could have been a famine, or it could have been a tiger or something like that that was chasing us. And so when our body's highly stressed, what the body does is it shuts down all of our digestive process, and it starts to do, you know, it pushes all our blood out to our arms and legs so that we can run fast to get away from the tiger. Or if there's no food around, it starts storing all of this, anything we do eat, it stores it around the tummy, because if there's not going to be any food while we're running away from the tiger, or there's not going to be any food because there's a famine, so we've stored it, and we can then utilize the energy of what's been stored around our tummy. Now, this is very, very common. And so this is what happens, you know, when you've got women who are highly stressed, they're storing this fat around their tummy because the brain's thinking, oh, is there a famine coming? Or is there a tiger coming? And it's not. It's all it is you've got, you know, everyone expecting you to do everything, and you've got notifications coming to you, and your job telling you one thing, your kids doing another thing, your parents telling you another thing, and the brain is reacting the same way. So you're storing this fat around your tummy, and then if you go on a diet and stop eating as much food, and then the brain goes, oh, my God, we're going into a famine. I'm going to hold on to more fat. Or you exercise more to try and work it off, and then the brain goes, oh, my God, there's a tiger chasing me. I'm going to store more fat. So this is what's happened. So stress is playing a really big role. And then the other side of that is insulin resistance. Now, what insulin is, it is a hormone that is released by the pancreas. And when we eat foods that are high in glucose, which is a form of sugar, what happens is the pancreas releases insulin, and the glucose needs to get inside the cell because that's where it produces energy. So what insulin does, it's a bit like a gatekeeper. It opens up the gate, lets the insulin into the cell. Then when the cell's full of lets the glucose into the cell. When the cell's full of glucose, it then closes the gate. And then once all the cells are full of glucose, if there's still more glucose in the blood because it can't stay in the blood because it's dangerous to your health, what it does, it shunts it off to the liver, and the liver converts it to fat and stores it around the belly. Once again, so that when we run out of energy, we can get it quickly. But we keep putting this food in, we keep putting these sugars in, these glucose in, into our body. So after time, insulin stops opening the doors because it just gets really tired from opening the gates to the cells, and it just goes, okay, I'm going to shunt that all over to the liver. So it just pushes all glucose over to the liver. The liver converts it as fat, sticks it on your belly. Now we've got a meno belly, and we have no energy because there's no glucose in the cells. So this is why we get this meno belly. We've got to be looking at that. So we've got to be dealing with the stress. We've got to be looking at the food. We've got to address the insulin resistance. And some people are more prone genetically to to insulin resistance than other people. And insulin resistance is it can be a precursor to type 2 diabetes. So we do want to address it. And many women experience this at this time of life because estrogen protects us against insulin resistance. So, you know, if it's not that bad, estrogen will protect you for a little while, but then after a while, once the estrogen levels have come down, this is where the things you've been eating, the things you've been doing start to come out, and we can no longer hide behind that protection. And then the other thing, and I did mention this just a little bit before around the thyroid, thyroid could also be playing a role, and I did mention this, and stress actually lowers your thyroid function. Not eating the right foods, particularly the thyroid requires specific nutrients to function to make thyroid hormone. The thyroid, the T4, which is what the thyroid releases, needs to convert to T3. So T4 is not active. T3 is the active hormone. It needs to go to the liver to do that conversion. If the liver's not working well because maybe you've been drinking too much alcohol or you've got a lot of stress going on, you're not going to get enough T3. And then your metabolism comes down, which now means everything's slowed down. Some people, once again, are more prone to thyroid issues than other people. And, you know, we probably know that someone says, oh, I've got slow metabolism. That is genetic. And other people have got fast metabolism. So just understanding that genetically, that some people are more prone to have a sluggish thyroid and their metabolism is prone to be slow. So we need to be managing that. And then, you know, if your thyroid is slow, it doesn't necessarily mean you've got thyroid disease. It can go on to thyroid disease, but, you know, it means you could struggle to lose weight. Thyroid weight tends to be more around the hips than around the tummy. So some women also hold weight around the hips as well as the tummy. Thyroid issues can lead to fatigue, hot flushes, anxiety, and many other symptoms. Hair loss also can be related to low thyroid function. So hopefully, and there are just a couple of the key things that I just wanted to cover off there, some of the key issues that we need to be really looking at and addressing. And hopefully now you can see that we can't be blaming everything just on menopause and your hormones, your reproductive hormones. There's other things that really do need to be considered, and we need to be looking at what's going on. And stress is basically underlying all of that. And stress being the food that you're eating, you know, the environment you're in, your lifestyle, your relationships, your jobs, your emotions, all of that, you know, what's happening, how is all that impacting your body? It's the underlying cause of just about every single symptom that you might be experiencing. We need to go deeper than just this, oh, it's just part of menopause. It's not just part of menopause. If it was, every woman would have the exact same experience, and every woman doesn't have the same experience. Some, as I said, some women sail through this time of year, this time of life without any issues. Others get it a lot more seriously. So we're not all doing it the same. If it was just all menopause, we would all be experiencing the exact same thing. And, you know, for some people, they would say, you know, well, okay, the hormones are coming out, I'm just going to take hormone therapy. And look, I'm not against hormone therapy, totally. It's a personal choice, and it depends on your situation. But if you're taking hormones and not addressing the food and the lifestyle choices, really you're only masking what's going on. And when you come off that hormone therapy, you'll probably find that your symptoms are worse. If you haven't addressed what's the underlying, the stress, the food, the lifestyle, all of that, or you will find over time, even if you stay on hormones, that you now pushing yourself into chronic disease, because these things are not being fixed. You know, the foods that you're eating, if you're not eating what your body requires, if you're not moving your body, if you're not getting enough sleep, these things are not being fixed by taking menopause, by taking hormones. So this is going to lead to chronic disease, and that's when your health starts to come down. But there are a few things that you can do to kind of put yourself back into control here. And these here, you know, these are the five pillars to thriving in menopause, and they are, you know, eating right for your body, moving right, doing the right type of exercise at the right amount, the right time for your body, reducing your exposure to environmental toxins, reducing your stress, and that includes, you know, making sure you're getting a good night's sleep, and changing your mindset. You know, and this because It's really important that when we do come to this time of life, if we think that menopause is going to be the worst time of our life, it is going to be. But if we can see it as an opportunity for us to make changes, for us to actually put in place measurements or steps that are going to improve our health, then that's what you're going to get. So, the mindset plays a really, really big role. When we look at these pillars, and I know that this is really, really high level, these five things, it's like, what does this mean? What does it mean to eat right for my body? What does it mean to move right for my body? How do you know what is right for your body? How do you reduce stress? Now, how many times have you been told by someone, oh, you just need to reduce stress? And you think, well, I would if I could, but life is stressful. Someone says, get a better night's sleep. You think, oh, if only I could. You dream about having a better night's sleep, because there is one more aspect to just this five pillars. And this is looking at your genetic blueprint. Your genes play a really big role. Your genes can hold the clues to exactly what your body requires to thrive in this half of your life, or actually to thrive in any half of your life, but I focus on women who are going through the menopause transitions. We know that genes, kind of determine your eye color, how tall you are, the color of your skin and all of that. We know that, that's obvious. It's kind of, that's what you get, your genes you get from your mother and your father, and you're kind of a combination of both or more, one or the other. Or maybe you're like your grandparents, but your genes also provide information about the inherent strengths and weaknesses of your body, your predisposition to certain diseases. And you might know that, that there's a family history of, say, cardiovascular disease. So that means that you've got a higher risk of having cardiovascular disease because that is genetic. And it doesn't mean you're going to get cardiovascular disease because there are some things you can do about that. And, we know that some bodies, they build muscle easily and they love to move. Their body just needs to move all the time, and they're always kind of going like little energizer bunnies. And then other people, they're a little bit slower and they don't build muscle as much. They might hold fat and they struggle to lose that fat. And, these are the people who are at higher risk of metabolic diseases like type 2 diabetes and things like that. Some people thrive when they eat five small meals a day. Others are okay on two meals a day. And I know when I was first in practice, I used to think everybody should be eating five meals a day. And now I know that that's not true, because everybody is different. And some people really work well if they're having five meals a day. Others are quite fine on meals a day. But I do see people who are intermittent fasting who I say, and what happens is they can get through for a certain amount of time, and then after it, it's really hard to stick to, and they start to get health issues. So some bodies are naturally lean, and some bodies, just put on weight. So we know this is genetics that determines this. Yes, what you eat makes a difference, but, some people, you've seen it, some people can eat junk food and never put on weight because it's in their genes. Other people can walk past a cake shop and don't even step inside it, and all of a sudden they put on an extra 5 kilos. This is how your genes work. And we can actually take that information, and when we understand how your genes work, we can then work out exactly what your body requires when it comes to food, exactly what your body requires when it comes to movement, the best time for you to sleep, the best time for you to eat, how many meals a day is ideal for you? Is it great for you to be exercising in the morning or exercising in the afternoon? So your genetic blueprint actually holds the key. It also tells us how you're going to move through menopause. As I said, some women don't have any issues and some women have lots and some are kind of sitting in the middle. This is all determined by your genes. But just because you have a set of genes doesn't mean that is what, you might, many people, you probably know about the BRCA1 gene, which is a gene which increases your risk of breast cancer. But not every woman that has the BRCA1 gene has breast cancer. And that's because we actually have the opportunity to actually change the expression. So we can either turn a gene on or turn it off. And that's what we call epigenetics. And we do that through food, environment and lifestyle choices. We're able to actually turn on or turn off genes. So when we know what your genes are, were able to say, well, okay, when you eat these foods, so just say you've got a gene which makes you a higher risk of, say, thyroid disease, then if we know we've got that gene, well, we know that certain foods decrease your risk of thyroid disease, but other foods will increase the risk. So we go, okay, eat the foods that decrease your risk and avoid the foods that increase your risk. So we can do this by understanding how your body works. So who would like to learn a little bit more about the role that your genes play and how you can experience this menopause transition? Because I do have a free workshop and it's on the 20th of May. So it's completely free. It's a four-day workshop. It starts the 20th of May and runs over four nights. And this is where I'm going to go deeper into the role that your genes play in how you can transition through menopause and how you can use this information to implement specific changes specific to what your body requires so you can thrive in the next stage of your life. In this workshop, you'll learn the six broad genetic categories, and everyone will fall into at least one of these categories. Sometimes it might be two. The differences between those different categories, the role of those epigenetic factors, so that's the environmental and food lifestyle choices in activating and turning on and off your genes, and how you can use that information to create the ideal life food and lifestyle solution that's going to be specific to you based on your family history, your health history, your current lifestyle, your genes, and your current symptoms. So join me on the 20th of May.
Hi, it's Angela and I am back again. I hope that you enjoyed that masterclass and hopefully it cleared up a little bit of confusion for you. If you still have some questions, please feel free to pop over into the Menopause Conversations Facebook group and I'll be happy to answer those questions over there for you. Now, I mentioned at the end that I do have the free Secret to Thriving in Menopause Without HRT workshop starting on May 20th. I would really love to see you over there. It's kind of like the next step after this masterclass. So please, if you want to join me, hope you do. The link is bit.ly/menopause_workshop. So that's bit.ly/menopause with a capital M. _workshop with a capital W, bit.ly/menopause_workshop. That link is over in the show notes if you're out and about and you can't write that down. But I really want to share more information with you. And honestly, if you've got friends who you think would love to know this, share this episode with them. Give them a heads up as to what is going on with their hormones, particularly if they're a little bit confused like you might have been, or if you're a health professional and you're listening to this, please feel free to share this with your clients. The more that women understand what is happening with their bodies as they come through this time of life, the better informed they are, and then they can make the right choices that work for them. So hope you enjoyed the episode. And I will be back next week with another episode of Menopause Conversations Podcast. Bye for now.